Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, it's Brendan here. Before we get into this week's episode of The Brendan O'Neill Show, I have some exciting news to share with you. This year, Spiked is celebrating its 25th birthday. 25 years ago, Spiked was a pioneer of online political journalism, and now we are bigger than ever. We're reaching people around the world with our articles, essays, videos, and podcasts, all underpinned by our principled message of freedom, democracy, and progress. This would never have happened without you, our listeners, readers, and supporters. Your donations fund our work, and your enthusiasm spreads the word about it. So as we mark Spiked's 25th birthday, we want to say a heartfelt thank you. And we're asking those who can afford it to donate to our anniversary appeal in order to keep Spiked going and growing into the future. We also have a very special offer on at the moment. Those who donate £25 or more will get a year's membership to Spike Supporters, our online donor community, where you can comment on articles, come to events, and read the site ad-free. This is half of what you'd normally pay for a year's membership. And if you're already a Spike supporter, you can benefit from this offer too. Just make a donation of £25 or more, and we'll extend your membership by 12 months. So, if you want to support Spiked and get access to some brilliant exclusive perks, go to spiked-online.com/donate. That's spiked-online.com/donate and donate £25 or more to help keep us going for another 25 years. Now, on with the show.
The person who murdered Salwan Mamaka, he is a drop in the ocean. He has a tsunami of support behind him. When these two nurses spoke up on camera talking about how they killed Jewish people in their hospital, it's because they know nothing is going to happen to them. This term, Islamophobia, it's like an invisibility cloak. It just blocks out everything. They can do whatever they want. We are facilitating and empowering them. We don't even realize we are leading ourselves to our destruction.
Hello, welcome back to the Brendan O'Neill Show with me, Brendan O'Neill, and my special guest this week, Yasmin Muhammad. Yasmin, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Brendan. Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you on. I've wanted you on for some time, and there's a lot for us to talk about, I think, in relation to the kind of work that you do and the kind of stuff that we're interested in at Spiked. And I guess I want to kick off by asking you about the Quran burnings, because there does seem to have been a spate of them recently. There's been some in Sweden, and one of the Quran burners there has been killed. There have been a couple recently in the UK, one in Manchester and one outside the Turkish embassy in London. A lot is going on. It seems to have taken off a little bit and have, of course, has caused a lot of discussion and a lot of pushback from certain sections of society. What do you make of this? What do you think is going on here?
So I normally wouldn't burn a Quran. It's not really my form of protest, but I very happily burned one recently and posted about it after Salwan Mamaka's murder. And I'm grateful to see that so many brave people have done the same thing. And I think the best way to push back against these murderers, these terrorists, these bullies, is to do exactly the thing that causes them to have their tantrums. You know, when we capitulate to them and when we pander to them and when we do things like what they did in Denmark, which is they criminalized burning the Quran, when we do things like that, we are just empowering them and encouraging them to continue with their bullying because they're seeing like, oh, look how the Western world panders to us. And so it encourages them to continue, it empowers them. And so that's why I love the fact that people have been burning Qurans in response to them murdering Salwan Mamaka. And, you know, we saw similar things after after Samuel Petit was killed in France. You know, we saw that there were people in France that were taking those images from Charlie Hebdo, the images that were so offensive to the people that murdered him. And they were putting those images all over buildings, all over France. And, you know, that's what we need to be doing. That's exactly it. So you fight back against their violence and their dominating, aggressive terrorist activities with free expression, with free speech, with showing them that we are not going to bow down to them and we are not going to lose our values in order to appease them.
Yeah, that's a really good way to kick the discussion off. And I'm like you, I'm not a fan of burning books. I don't like to see a book on fire. Mm-hmm. I think books should be read. And once you finish reading them, you should give them away or put them on a shelf or whatever. So book burning is not my style. But I think you're right. The more that society has this meltdown, Western society has this meltdown about anyone who disrespects the Quran or sets fire to the Quran, the more that does take on a sense of doing it takes on a sense of momentum, something that it's important, I think, to at least support people's right to do. And one of the pushbacks we see, not only from Islamist groups and self-styled Muslim spokespeople, but also from mainstream society, from the so-called liberal press and from government officials as well across Europe. One of the points they make is that this is hurtful, it's disrespectful, you're going to wound people's feelings, and they even say it's punching down. What do you make of those kinds of arguments against disrespecting the Quran?
It's so infantilizing. You know, this, it's just, it's literally the bigotry of low expectations, because they would not have these reactions when people say whatever they want to say about Jehovah's Witness. People say whatever they want to say about Mormons. People can, you know, you can criticize what we've got, like Life of Brian. Like, these are making fun of religion, and has been, it's just a part of Western civilization. It's a part of being enlightened. You know what I mean? It's a part of free expression. It's so much the fabric of European society. And so for them to come now at this point and say, oh, you're going to offend the feelings of the people who want you to be murdered, you know, it's just, it boggles the mind. You know, like, we've fought so hard to get to this point in history, and they're so comfortable with allowing themselves to be clawed back 1400 years and to capitulate to theocratic rules that demand that they do not criticize that their religion, and they do not speak up against their religion because it could offend them. So be offended. You need to be offended. These parts of your religion are killing people. These parts of your religion are encouraging child marriage and child rape and female genital mutilation and the murdering of gay people. So yeah, let's criticize it. That's okay. If you get offended over the fact that people are upset that you are causing death and destruction across the world, well, the problem is not with the people who are speaking up. The problem is with these actions. And, you know, if they were decent human beings, they would be speaking up against these actions just as loudly.
It does often feel like there's a kind of neo-blasphemy law creeping in Western society. And, you know, the two recent incidents we've had of Quran burning here in the UK, a guy burned a Quran in Manchester, and another man burned one out, a Kurdish man burned one outside the Turkish consulate in London. Both of those men were arrested. They're going to be charged. The accusation made against them is that they are guilty of religiously or racially aggravated offense, or a racially aggravated public order offense. That's how it's described. But to most of us, or to many of us anyway, it just looks like they're really being charged with blasphemy. They're being accused essentially of behaving in a blasphemous fashion to a supposedly holy book. Do you worry that under the cover of all this kind of euphemistic language, and often quite politically correct language, we are seeing the rehabilitation of the idea of blasphemy in a supposedly free West?
We have been seeing that for a very long time, unfortunately, Brendan. That is the situation right now. When the Islamists came up with this term, Islamophobia, that is exactly what they had in mind. So for years, the OIC, the Organization of Islamic Cooperative at the UN, so they're the largest non-governmental body other than the UN, there are 57 Muslim majority countries. They have tried for the longest time to pass blasphemy laws, to make it illegal to criminalize criticizing Islam. And that has not been successful. So what they did instead was they created this term Islamophobia, and they very stealthily created it so that it would sound like things like xenophobia, homophobia, right? Make it sound like a progressive word, so that good people, quote unquote, you know, because, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, right? A lot of these people think that they're being good. Oh, we're going to protect and defend, you know, these Muslims, but you're not. You're protecting and you're defending the ideology of Islam. And once they came up with that term, that is essentially what it was, is it was bottom up blasphemy laws. They couldn't do top down like they do in Iran and Saudi Arabia and Pakistan and Afghanistan and everywhere else. They can't arrest people. They can't lash them in the streets. They can't behead them. They can't, you know, imprison them and kill them. So they said, you know what we'll do? We'll make this term. We'll pass it on, propagate it amongst the useful idiots, and they will use the term for us, and they will police people for us. And it has worked like a charm, unfortunately.
It really has. And, you know, if you read some of the documents that the Iranian officials write, for example, which they submit to the United Nations or some other global body, they will openly say, you know, the West needs to be harder on Islamophobia. The West needs to take more responsibility for tackling this so-called bigotry. And of course, when there have been Quran burnings in recent years in Sweden and Denmark, these Muslim majority countries really attacked Sweden and Denmark and called in their representatives for a dressing down and said, you need to stop this. You need to quash these criticisms of Islam. So it is extraordinary the extent to which blasphemy has been snuck in under the banner of Islamophobia. But why do you think so many, I guess, Western leftists and liberals, and even beyond that, government officials and others, why have they bought into the idea of Islamophobia so entirely? I mean, you talk about how it's a word that is purposely meant to mimic ideas like xenophobia and homophobia, which all good people are against. That's part of it. But what is it, do you think, that makes them not only accept the idea of Islamophobia, but to turn themselves into warriors against Islamophobia? Why do you think they're willing to do that?
I mean, that's really the million-dollar question that I ask myself all the time. Why are they committing? Why are they so eager to commit social suicide? Mm. You know, we read Douglas Murray's book, The Strange Death of Europe. He wrote that in, you know, 2016. And it has all come to fruition. It was like a prophecy. You know, like we all saw this coming. Brendan, you've been talking and writing about this for so long. You know, you were one of the voices that were, when it was when nobody was talking about these things, right? You were one of the few voices that were out there where I was like, oh, a sane human being who sees what's going on, you know, it makes you feel like you've just, you know, you can breathe oxygen again. But this has been happening for a very long time. And I do not know why we keep on going further and further and further and further down this rabbit hole. It's getting worse and worse and worse every day. We're talking about Europe. We're talking about the UK. And, you know, it's been obviously with the rape gangs in Rotherham and throughout the UK that we saw an example of exactly how much they're willing to capitulate, how much they're willing to. This term Islamophobia is just like this. It's like an invisibility cloak. It just blocks out everything. They can do whatever they want. They can rape girls and keep them imprisoned in their homes and, you know, and do the most heinous things to them. And nobody wants to talk about it because they don't want to be called an Islamophobe. Like, how is that word so powerful that you're willing to let, you know, to sacrifice your daughters under this, you know, at this altar of Islamophobia? And, you know, just recently in Australia, there was two nurses that were saying on camera that they happily killed Jewish people in their hospital. And there was such an outcry from all normal people. And recently, 50 Islamic organizations from Australia wrote publicly in support of these two nurses. So this goes back to what you were saying about how the other countries all kind of descended upon Sweden and Denmark and forced them to change their laws and forced them to, you must do something to stop these people from burning the Quran. This is what you have to understand, is the person who murdered Salwan Mamaka, he is a drop in the ocean. He has a tsunami of support behind him, right? When these two nurses spoke up so empowered, so comfortable, so confident on camera, talking about how they kill Jewish people in their hospital, it's because they know nothing is going to happen to them. And because they know they have the ummah of, you know, the 2 billion people strong ummah behind them to support them. And unfortunately, that is exactly what happens. You know, it is a cult. I was a part of this cult. It is a hive mentality. I describe in my book like a school of fish. Everybody has to move in unison. Everybody has to follow and do what they're told. You shut off your brain. You shut off your thinking. You shut off your heart. You shut off your feelings, your emotions. You shut off everything, because all of that is from the devil. And you just follow. You just do as you're told. It's mind control. And we are not equipped. We don't realize what we're up against. And that's really, that was the subtitle of my book is How the West Empowers Radical Muslims. We don't know what we are up against. And it's so much so that we are facilitating and empowering them under the guise of diversity and inclusion and multiculturalism. And we don't even know what we're doing. We don't even realize how badly we are leading ourselves to our destruction.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Yeah, I was reading about the 50 self-styled Muslim community groups in Australia that came out in defense of those two nurses. I was reading about that today, actually, and it was just, it's extraordinary because, you know, in their letter, they say that the nurses were just being emotional and they were just criticizing Israel. And you think to yourself, since, you know, we all get emotional, but we don't go around dreaming of killing people from the Jewish state. You know, that's not a normal response to feeling emotional. So there's a lot of back covering going on there. You talk about, and you've written about this in your book and elsewhere for a long time now. I've been following your work closely. And you talk about how the West emboldens radical Islamists and Islamism more broadly. And I think that's a really interesting point and worth kind of thinking about. So you've mentioned Salwan Momika in Sweden, who was the guy who was originally from Iraq. He's from a Christian background. He was a critic of Islam and he was used to burn the Quran in Sweden, in Stockholm, and he was killed. And when that happened, I was so horrified, as were lots of decent people. And it just made me think that actually execution for blasphemy has kind of come back to Europe. You know, we had his case in Sweden. We had the beheading of Samuel Paty in France a few years ago. We, of course, the Charlie Hebdo massacre. We've just had the 10th anniversary of that, where people were slaughtered for the crime of making fun of Muhammad. People are literally, in the 21st century, people in Europe are being executed, summarily executed for criticizing Islam. And I guess the question is, what are the consequences if society doesn't clearly push back against that? I know society pays lip service to the idea that it's a bad thing to kill people, but it doesn't firmly, morally push back against behavior like that. And that's quite dangerous, isn't it?
Oh my God, it's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. So these are, you know, we're inviting people into our homes that have ideologies and have beliefs and have value systems that are the antithesis of ours here in the West. And then when they act upon the values and the beliefs that they hold so deeply, we get surprised and we say, hey, 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 you're not supposed to do that here. You know, it's like, what did you think was going to happen? You know, if you move to Cuba, you're not suddenly going to embrace communism, right? You're still going to be who you are. And so we can't expect people to just, you know, as soon as they enter the shores here, as soon as they get onto, you know, into the UK, that suddenly they're going to believe in democracy and freedom and liberty and, you know, free expression. And no, These ideas don't have borders. They cross with the people in their minds, right? And if we do not, and we already do not, I feel like we are so past this point of what I'm saying right now. But like, if we do not stand firm and push back against them trying to uphold their values in Western societies, then we will lose. We will lose to them, right? Liberalism is wonderful, right? Live and let live. But if you are up against a group who vehemently believe that they're the opposite of live and let live. They believe that if you do not agree with what they are saying, if you do not convert, if you are not in line, then you must be killed. So they don't want you to live and let live. They want to live and you die if you're not going to live along with them. So we're at a stalemate here. We're at a position where we can't, unless we completely change our value system and we start to become, totalitarian and theocratic and all of these horrible things, unless we start to become more like them, you're not going to be able to fight fire with fire. And we are really, really, really dangerously very far, far, far down the road of a point of no return. A long, long time ago, we saw this coming, and a long, long time ago, there should have been reactions. From the minute the Charlie Hebdo massacre happened, we should have printed those cartoons on every flat surface in every Western nation, but we didn't. Even on the news, when they were talking about it, they would blur out the magazine. They would blur out the cartoons. We did the exact wrong thing over and over and over and over again. And that's how they continue to get empowered. And, I just feel I'm so disheartened, terrified, sad, angry at the state that we're in right now. And I just know that the only way for us to pull back from this, unfortunately, is going to be ugly. It's going to be ugly because we've gone too far down the road where this is not going to be, this cannot end in a peaceful manner anymore. We've gone too far down the road. I mean, do you remember the flags? Do you remember when they were walking around in the streets in their quote unquote pro-Palestine rallies, and they had those ISIS flags, and the Met police were like, those aren't ISIS flags. That's just the Shahada, which is like, are you a moron? Like, they are morons. They're like, no. We asked our Muslim police officers. Oh, you did. Did you? You asked the Fox, right? About how the hen house is protected. Is that what you did? It's literally as if they had said, oh, no, that's not a Nazi flag. That's just a swastika. That's how stupid they sounded, right? They don't even know what they're up against. And that's why it's so terrifying, because people like us who have been speaking about this and who are trying to tell them what they're up against, we are the ones that are demonized. We are the ones that are silenced as they continue to march towards their destruction.
Yeah, and I also remember when the Metropolitan Police in London said people were on the streets calling for jihad against the Jewish state, and the police said, yeah, well, jihad has many different meanings. I just think, they've lost the plot. We all know when there are mobs of people calling for more jihad against Israel, we know what they mean. We know exactly what they mean. Just in the relation to the free speech question, I've got other things I want to ask you about as well, of course. This has kind of been a long time coming. We all think back to the Salman Rushdie controversy in the late 1980s, and that's blown up again over the past couple of years because he was attacked. And that trial is now going on. It seems to me, back during the Satanic Verses scandal, there was some people in the West who defended Rushdie. Some defended him very passionately and with great moral principle, but there were others who were reluctant to do so. So that was that kind of caginess about defending liberal principles from the threat of Islamist intolerance. That was there a long time ago. But it seems to me that since the Rushdie affair, it's almost like we in the West have internalized Iran's fatwa. You know, it's almost like we don't actually need an Ayatollah to issue a fatwa anymore because we issue them ourselves. And you know, as soon as someone criticizes Islam, we're rolling our eyes or we're calling the police or we're saying sack them from their job. It's like we're doing the Ayatollah's dirty work for him. And how do you explain that kind of internalization of the code against blasphemy that seems to have taken place in the West in recent years?
Yeah, 100%. I agree with your depressing assessment completely. Like, at least back in Salman Rushdie, you know, the first time he was attacked, it was, you know, there was still a public discussion about it, you know, whereas now it's like there's no discussion. If you try to open your mouth, you're the bad guy. So what we have been doing for the past couple decades is we have been slowly eroding our own self-worth. We're telling people about how the West is bad and all these other cultures are glorious and noble. We're talking about how white people are bad and every other color of the rainbow is you know, good and moral. And we are when you start to break down people's self-worth to that extent, it's so easy after that to dominate them and to you don't even have to encourage them or convince them. They're already on board. They already think that they are scum and they are horrible and they are the reason for, you know, all of the evils in the world and yada yada. Like, instead of talking about how, you know, the UK stopped slavery in Saudi Arabia in the 1960s, for goodness sake, right? We don't talk about the Arab slave trade and how it's still going on. No, we'll talk about how, oh, the white people, they were the slave traders and they were the slave owners. And it's like all of this constant, you know, self-flagellation. And so because we've demeaned ourselves so much, we've diminished ourselves so much, we've focused on all of the negative things, ignored all of the positive things, in fact, inflated all of the negative things while completely ignoring all of the positive things. We now have a society of people who are just full of self-hate. And so it's so easy at that point, you know, when October 7th happened, you had this really ridiculous response of people finding the letter that Osama bin Laden had written after 9/11, you know, how he was talking about how, you know, the West was, you know, so debaucherous and horrible and full of heathens and needs to go. And they're agreeing with it. They're agreeing with Osama bin Laden because that is where we are now. That's what's happened. We slowly led them to this conclusion, which is that Western civilization is a failed experiment. And look at these wonderful Eastern religions and how noble they are and how wonderful they are. And they, you know, they talk about Hamas being socialists and, you know, like, you know, queers for Gaza and whatever, like they're so confused. And they've just been duped. They've been duped into hating themselves and looking beyond and thinking that, you know, we cannot criticize any other civilizations except for Western civilization. So therefore, they never see any faults in any other civilizations except for their own.
Such an important point. And it strikes me that there's a kind of, I guess there's a kind of racism to this.
100%.
You know, these people, you know, they pose as implacably anti-racist and, you know, they are anti-fascist in their own words, etc. And yet I've often thought that their reluctance to criticize what they would see as a non-white nation, especially any part of the Muslim world, because that would be judgmental and Islamophobic and problematic. There's a kind of racial paternalism there. And, you know, you can see that really in the discussion over Israel-Hamas that has been taking place in the West over the past 16, 17 months. There is a real palpable reluctance to ever criticize Hamas or to ever criticize Palestinians and what they have done, or certainly what they did on the 7th of October. And it seems to me there's this kind of patrician approach to Arabs and Muslims. Yeah. And so they say that tackling Islamophobia is a means of tackling racism, but actually there's a racial component to it, isn't there?
100% agree with you. It is the bigotry of low expectations. They do absolutely 100% everything that you just described there does happen. And it is so infuriating because as somebody who lived in the Arab world, as somebody who has lived under Islamic theocracies, these are people that pretend to care about topics like they pretend to care about feminism, for example. They pretend to care about women. They pretend to care about gay people. They will scream about these topics over here in the West. But when you say to them, oh, but did you realize that there are 15 Muslim majority countries that will execute you for being gay? Not a word. Complete silence. They won't speak up against that. So you only care about gay people when they're living in the West. You don't care about gay people when they're living, you know, throughout the rest of the world. That they don't matter as much to you, right? Women, right? All of these feminist, child marriage. Iraq, just the age of marriage in Iraq used to be 18 and they clawed it back down to nine years old. They're basically, they've legalized pedophilia in their country. And nobody wants to speak up. No feminists want to speak up against that. No women's groups want to speak up against that because they don't want to be seen as Islamophobic, right? They'll speak up against any kinds of Christian fundamentalists that maybe are marrying their children off before they're adults. Of course, they'll speak up against that till their throats are dry, right? But they're not going to say a word about it if it's happening in Afghanistan or Yemen or Iraq or anywhere else. So yeah, it's absolutely the bigotry below expectations. And it's absolutely racism too, because essentially what you're saying is, we don't care about those girls. We don't care about those gay people. We only care about our people over here. So they don't even realize how you know, disgusting they sound when they pretend to be anti-racist and they pretend to be this and that and the other thing. When through their actions, they're showing that they genuinely do not care about those brown people over there.
Yeah, I specifically wanted to ask you about feminism and feminism's betrayals on this issue, on this question, and its betrayal of Muslim women and also Jewish women. If you think about, you know, the reluctance of feminists in the West to call out what Hamas did on the 7th to women on the 7th of October, and in fact, in some cases, feminists have made excuses for that or said that it didn't really happen or have called it an act of resistance or a day of celebration. Yeah. Really shocking stuff. You know, many listeners will be familiar with your story that you, as you've just said, you've lived under Islamic theocracy. You escaped from a forced marriage. You were concerned about what would happen to you, what would happen to your daughter if you stayed in that part of the world. Give us a sense of what it's like for a woman growing up under Islamic rule or Islamic theocracy. And also give us a sense of what it feels like to be a woman like that who then doesn't even win the sisterhood of feminists in the West.
Yeah, that really was the ultimate shocking betrayal, because I literally clawed my way like tooth and nail out of that world and came out the other side. And you expect, you hope that you're going to be embraced by, you know, the free thinkers and the free West, but you have the wrong, like, you're the wrong victim. You have the wrong oppressor is what happened, you know, it is just continued, you know, whether we're talking about the victims of the rape gangs in the UK, whether we're talking about the victims of Hamas on October 7th, women that were raped by these men, whether we're talking about Hindu girls in Pakistan, whether we're talking about Christian girls in Nigeria, whether we're talking about Yazidi girls in Iraq, the story, it goes on and on and on and on and on, right? They all have the wrong oppressors. If your oppressor is a white man or if your oppressor is a Jewish man, then you're a good victim. They'll support you. They'll speak up for you. They'll defend you. But if your oppressor is a brown man, if your oppressor is a Muslim man, then you need to keep your mouth shut because you are going to now cause Islamophobia. So here we are trying to talk about our traumas. I was married to a literal terrorist, and I can't speak about that without being attacked as if I am the bad person in this scenario. I'm constantly getting my talks canceled. In fact, I just had one at King's College that was canceled because they feel that my voice, my life, my trauma, my experiences, things, I have been silenced. You know, Muslim women, we're taught to believe that our voice is aura. That, like, this is why in Afghanistan, the voice of a woman can't be heard. Your aura means shame or nakedness, right? We weren't even allowed to speak. When I was a Muslim, I wasn't even allowed to speak. I was covered head to toe in black. My face was covered in black cloth, two layers of black cloth. That's how they muzzled me physically, psychologically, you know, in every possible way. And then I finally have like a Twitter account and I want to start talking about everything that happened to me. I want to start writing my book. Nobody wants to hear it. Nobody wants to publish my book. I had to self-publish, right? Nobody's interested. Nobody wants to hear it. I'm the wrong survivor. I'm the wrong victim. My oppressors were the wrong color.
Yeah, that's incredibly well put. And it's almost like a form of complicity, isn't it? With, I mean, you know, the silencers of the West who would consider themselves woke and politically correct, I mean, they're being complicit with the silencers of the Islamic theocracy, because you have a situation now where women are silenced under those regimes. The most extreme example, as you mentioned there, is Afghanistan, where even the sound of a woman's voice is now considered problematic. And then some of those same women, if they are lucky enough to escape to the West and to escape that kind of oppression, then they're silenced over here. They're often blacklisted from university campuses, like Mariam Namazi was, the Iranian activist, because she was considered Islamophobic. Or they're looked upon as a bit of an awkward squad. You know, these women complaining about the Muslim world, it's very problematic, we don't want to hear it. There's a kind of, I think it probably goes beyond, people talk about the Islamo-Left Alliance, which I think is a real thing, but it kind of goes beyond that. It's like a form of complicity with the oppression of the theocratic regime itself.
100%, because they're providing cover for them. Nadia Murad, who is a Yazidi survivor of, she was a sex slave to ISIS fighters. And in Canada, they refused to have her speak about her book because they said that she was going to be encouraging Islamophobia. So what you're doing at that point is you're saying to this woman who is a victim, and hundreds of thousands of Yazidi people were killed, and it, you know, it was a genocide of Yazidi people, you know, and if they weren't killed, then they were taken as sex slaves, or they were young boys that were forced to become soldiers, essentially fodder for the ISIS, you know, terrorism. And for her to tell her story, they said that was Islamophobia. So what you're doing at that point is you're silencing the victim in order to protect her oppressors.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Host. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethost.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Host. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethost.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Host. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethost.com/terms.
Yeah, that's exactly what they are doing. I'm kind of stunned by your description of it because it's so accurate that that is what they are doing. I did want to ask you how much you think this might be down to ignorance on the part of the activist class in the West. I mean, if you think about all the crazy stuff that has happened since 7th of October in particular on American campuses, Canadian campuses, British campuses, where we've had loads of young people wearing the kefir and openly supporting Hamas in some cases and denying the crimes of 7th of October and denying the rapes of 7th of October.
Or celebrating the rapes and the crimes of 7th of October.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, that's right. And I think about Columbia University in New York, where there was a banner describing Israel as the pigs of the earth, and which is just openly anti-Semitic, and people chanting for the destruction of Israel, saying we should go back to 1948 before Israel, modern Israel existed. It's been horrifying, but I find myself flitting between thinking that these people have sold their souls to a tyrannical ideology and also thinking they just don't know what they're doing. Famously, if someone asks them, can you name the river to the sea that you keep chanting about? Very often they can't. So, you know, there is a level where they don't understand what's going on. How much do you put it down to ignorance and how much do you put it down to a serious submission to these new ideologies?
I think I used to put it down to ignorance for years. And now I'm just at the point of, you know what, if you are ignorant, then that's your choice. Like it's almost impossible to be ignorant on these topics. Like it's so blatant. It's so common. Like we're talking about, you know, there was in Vienna, a Syrian man just killed a 14-year-old boy and was stabbing people in the streets. And like these cases come up so often that it's almost blasé now. You know what I mean? Like we see it all the time. And there is no way anymore that there's anyone who is that ignorant about what's going on. You know, on October 7th, they released the videos. We all saw Shani Luke on the back of that truck, twisted and contorted. We saw them spitting on her body. We saw that with our own eyes. Like they shared that with the world. And still people can come out after that. And the next day, call them freedom fighters and post pictures of paragliders as if they're these heroes. And like, There's no way it's not ignorance. It can't be anymore. There's no way that you can't know. There's no way that you're not seeing these Bebas babies, the babies and their mom, you know, and their dad being released without his wife or children, or that other father that when they were releasing him, they made him say, "I'm excited to see my wife and kids." And they laughed at him because they know that they killed his wife and children on October 7th. Like, there's no way that people aren't seeing this. This has been front and center in the news for over a year and a half. Like, there's no way anybody can feign ignorance at this point. It's a choice now. Now you are choosing to be ignorant. I can understand those who are indoctrinated with hate because they don't care what the facts are. They don't care what the reality is. They don't care how many Jewish people die. In fact, they will be happy. They will celebrate it openly. But anybody who pretends to be an open-minded liberal thinker, these people call themselves progressive, which is like an insult to the word progressive. You know, anybody of these people who pretend to be, you know, anywhere left of Nazi, you know, like they anybody who is still on the wrong side of this is actively making the choice to be on that side. There's no way that it can be ignorance anymore.
Yeah, I think that's true. Absolutely true. It's, you know, we know what happened. Everyone knows what happened. And it's so interesting after 7th of October. I mean, as many people have pointed out, this was the most well-documented pogrom in history. I mean, they filmed it, as you say, and they shared their footage with glee. They shared their sadistic footage on their Telegram channels. People have seen it. And still they either deny it or celebrate it. And it is, that's what's going on. It's either a kind of new form of Holocaust denialism or open celebration of what the pogromists did on that day.
That's right. Exactly what they do about the Holocaust. The exact same thing. 6 million Jews were not killed. That's not true. And also they deserved it. That's how they talk. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I want to ask you about what we might do about this. I think, you know, one doesn't ever want to give in to despair, but that can be hard at times when, as you say, there is now so many Islamist terror attacks in Europe that they become almost blasé. They kind of pass us by. And we also forget about them very quickly. That's the other thing I've noticed. People forget that these atrocities happened quite quickly. They kind of just disappear into the lost memory. So lots of bad things are happening, but I wonder if there's a way out of this. And I think what you've described very well, and you've been describing this very well for a long time, is there is this kind of like a suicidal culture in the West. So you have, you know, you mentioned Queers for Palestine, you know, people who would be thrown off the top of a building if Hamas got its way, or, you know, feminists who are saying virtually nothing about what's happening in Afghanistan and other parts of the Muslim world, even though these are their sisters who are being dehumanized and oppressed in the most unconscionable fashion. So it's this kind of suicidal culture in the West where people are embracing ideas and thoughts and ideologies which are devoted to the destruction of Western liberal values. So it can feel very depressing, but what are your thoughts about cutting through this? And you said at the beginning that you think even something like burning the Quran can become an important thing in a culture in which that is strictly forbidden. What else do you think people can do to push back against some of this stuff?
I think the only thing we can do is be more courageous. And I'll tell you a little story. No Hijab Day was on February 1st, which there is a World Hijab Day where they go around, I'm sure you must have heard about it, where they go around and they put hijabs on non-Muslim women and they encourage them to wear hijab for the day. And so in direct contrast to that, I started No Hijab Day, which is a day to support women who do not want to wear the hijab, and a day to speak up against, you know, the misogyny and the anti-woman hate of that tool of control of women. And a woman wrote to me, she's from London, and she works for a small organization. It's got less than 150 people there. And they announced that they were going to be, that for the months of February and March, they were going to be celebrating these four different events. Three out of four of those events were Muslim related. One of them was World Hijab Day. One of them was Ramadan. Another was Eid. And the fourth one was International Women's Day. And so because she'd been seeing all my posts about No Hijab Day, No Hijab Day, No Hijab Day, she started to feel empowered, confident, ready to write a letter to HR and explain to them why celebrating World Hijab Day was such a toxic anti-woman thing to do. And she respectfully wrote out a letter, cited all of her sources, was very careful with her language. And then she sent the letter off to HR, and then she wrote a letter to me, and she said, "You inspired me to do this, but you know, I'm terrified. I don't know what's going to happen." A couple days later, she writes to me and she says, "You're never going to believe this. HR wrote back to me. They said, we completely hear you. We completely support you. In fact, we want you to do a presentation company-wide on International Women's Day to talk to us about the hijab and why it's toxic. Talk to us about the women in Iran. Talk to us about the women in Afghanistan. Talk to us about the women in the UK have been killed. Tell us all of these stories that you put for us in this email. I want you to present this to the entire organization." So that is the power of being courageous. Once you speak up, you have no idea how many people behind you are thinking and feeling the exact same thing, but they just are not as courageous as you. And they just weren't able to speak up. But as soon as you open your mouth and you start speaking, they will all join in with you. You just have to be courageous. And I implore you, your life depends on it. You are not in Iran. There's no IRGC that's going to take you, shove you in a van and throw you in prison, right? There's no morality police here. Your fears the way they control you with these fears against, you know, the word Islamophobia or the word bigotry or the word this or the word that, you have to remember that as you were controlled by these words, atrocities are being allowed to happen because of your inability, because of your inactivity, right? If we're specifically talking about the UK, think of all of these girls who were victims in all of these rape gangs. If people were able to speak up against it, journalists were losing their jobs, politicians were losing their jobs. You know, people working in nonprofits were being disgraced and losing their funding. This is what was happening when they were speaking up, right? And so that's why it was allowed to continue throughout the country and thousands of girls. That's why it happened. But if there were more people speaking up, they're not going to disgrace you all. They're not going to, you know, you're not all going to lose your jobs. Like, you have to just, you have to believe in your power as the rational majority, because you're still the majority, you know. Soon that may not be the case, but right now you're still the majority. So you have to speak up in defense of your values. You're the United Kingdom, for goodness sake. The whole world looks up to you. I don't think you get that. I don't think you understand how devastating it is for the rest of the world to see what you're doing, to see how you are crumbling. Like, you're like, this is Great Britain. Like, how dare you? You know, like, you're making us all, you're scaring us. You're petrifying us all. You know, we all look up to you. And, you know, we really, 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 really do not want to see this, you know, go pear-shaped. And we 100% support you all around the world. But we just, you know, even if it means, you know, if you speak up, they're going to call you this and call you that, let them call you whatever they want to call you. You know, it's like the other side to that is that you're going to lose your civilization. You're going to lose your values. You're going to lose your everything that the UK stands for. And you don't want that. Nobody in the world wants that. Well, some people in the world want that. But we absolutely, you know, we implore you to please, please, please push back against these bullies that are infiltrating your country.
Yeah, that's a great rallying cry for courage, which I think is the is the most undervalued virtue of our time. And it really can't be overstated how infectious courage can be when people stand up and speak out, as you have done, as you've been doing for many, many years. Okay, and the last point, I guess, which relates to exactly what you've just been saying, is about the importance of freedom of speech in relation to all of this. So we started off talking about the Quran burnings. In my view, destroying a book is an act of free expression and it should not be criminalized. But freedom of speech really is essential to all of this, isn't it? In terms of what you've just described, speaking up and saying what you believe. But also the right of people to criticize any aspect of Islam that they want to criticize, and the right of people to speak out about something like Britain's rape gangs without being silenced or branded Islamophobic or whatever else it might be. Free speech really is, I guess, the foundation stone for however we choose eventually to tackle the problems you're describing. Free speech has got to be the starting point, hasn't it?
100% agree with that. Absolutely.
Brilliant. Yasmin, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Brendan. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for listening to The Brendan O'Neill Show. We'll be back with another guest and more discussion. Don't forget to subscribe. And in the meantime, keep reading Spiked at www.spiked-online.com.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.